Chapter 2. Mi solus d'artome, Bale Brea Fox. Aldera's springs were rainy. The air grew heavy with moisture, and the smell of damp earth was omnipresent. Even more so for Fox, who'd taken to helping the palace gardeners in his spare time. The mud got under his fingernails in a pervasive way that took days to remove. It's good preparation for Camino, Fox told Brea, as he toweled his hair dry. She'd come into the ensuite bathroom after him to talk. The rain here is nothing compared to that. She passed him her hairdryer. It doesn't sound like a particularly pleasant place to go back to, even leaving aside the people. Fox hadn't laid eyes on a single one of the Kaminoan scientists who had created him in over a year, since the Senate trials on the Gar had finally finished hearing their testimony. But he still saw them all too frequently in his dreams. It'll only be for a few weeks, he reminded Brea, as much as himself. She frowned slightly. I still don't like you going back there alone. It was the first time that Fox would be off-planet from both of his soulmates for more than a few days since the start of his time with the Coruscant Guard. You were here alone for so long. Bale is on Coruscant alone now. You don't need to treat me any differently. One of the oddities of having a three-part soulmate bond was that they could be partially together and partially apart. Brea had borne that for the first year of their relationship, and then Bale had been left alone on Coruscant. It hadn't been easy for any of them, and yet it was good. They spoke frequently, and even worlds away, Fox was well aware that Bale loved him and was thinking of him. He'd figured out how to fold Flimsy into Fox's, and over the last few months he'd lost enough that Fox had a little squadron of them sitting on top of his dresser. One of the blessings of soulmates was no matter how far away you were never truly apart. Brea sighed, running her fingers across the edge of the marble countertop. I know, and I know you'll have your Vade with you, but I'd be happy if you never had to deal with anything hard again in your life. Fox wished much the same for her and for Bale, but he couldn't make that happen any more than Brea could. I know, but it's not long at all, and then I'll be home, and the shiniest shinies can be on their way to Yamaria, and everything will be fine. Brea took his hand and kissed his slightly muddied fingers. When you get home, it'll only be 2 months until the wedding. Don't think you're going to get out of helping with planning just because you aren't my only arm candy. All three of them were busy, high-achieving people. These last few restful months had been the only time in Fox's entire life where he hadn't been responsible for the lives of his brothers in one way or another. Please, if anyone is the arm candy in this relationship, it's Bale. Have you seen that beard of his? Brea laughed. Just a promise to take care of yourself, and call us as often as you can. I will. Camino was the same in many ways. The rain pounded on the landing platform just as it had when Fox last left this miserable, wet nightmare of a planet. The domes of Topoka City still cascaded with water, and inside were the same hallways and rooms where Fox had spent what little childhood he'd been afforded. And yet, aside from these details, Camino could not have been more different from the planet Fox had once tentatively called home. That was clear from almost the minute of his arrival. As he landed, Fox found that he was handed a heavy-duty umbrella by a young Kaminoan in green robes. Commissioner, she greeted him politely. My name is Alan C. I'm the head of the Restitution Commission. So you're also a commissioner? Fox asked, having to yell somewhat over the torrential rain, which had begun to bucket down even harder than usual. She tilted her head slightly. I suppose. Just call me Alan. He didn't think any Kaminoan had ever asked him to use their personal name before, but, of course, most of the old Kaminoan government, especially the heads of the cloning program, had been arrested for treason, collaboration with a Sith, and conspiracy to commit murder. Perhaps that meant things were better now. Don't let Alan fool you, Colt said, once he'd finished wrapping their skulls together in an affectionate greeting. Most of the new Kaminoan government is just the junior officials from the old Kaminoan government. She's the exception, not the rule. It's true, Alan admitted, rather agreeably, shaking her umbrella out in the entranceway. But I am trying my best, you know. You're a propaganda machine at work, Alan. She made the best approximation of a very rude gesture that she could with three fingers. "Look, Commissioner, may I call you Fox?" "You may." "Look, Fox, Camino is on the verge of disaster. The Separatists are all getting treated like their points were legitimate now, since Palpatine really did turn out to be an evil menace trying to control the galaxy. Anyone who was on one side of the war, even if that side was the Separatists, is in the clear. We're arguably the guiltiest party still alive and kicking, and we're about to have our entire economy collapse after the Republic squeezes out every cent they paid to us to commit these war crimes so that they can look less guilty in the whole sordid affair. My entire job is to do things so the new government can feel like they're the good guys. I don't really have their support to do anything productive. Make sense? It wouldn't have made a lot of sense to the Fox who'd first left Camino, but that Fox hadn't spent years in a relationship with a queen and a senator, both of whom trusted him enough to speak plainly about their work. You'd like to help, but you don't have any resources, and you only have the tolerance of the new government because they don't have any other choice. She nodded. Also, I think there's going to be a coup the second there aren't 100,000 heavily armed Republic troopers keeping an eye on us. Possibly a civil war. Excellent. Just what Fox needed to walk into. And what about everything we still need from you? Well, said Colt, now you see why I needed backup to get everyone and everything off this planet in the next 50 days. So, are we going to get a chance to meet this Fox before the wedding? Bail sat back at his desk and thanked his lucky stars that only Sully had been able to make it to Coruscant for this lecture. He made a point not to have a favorite sister, but all of them were better on their own, and Sully was, in some very particular respects, the best of all of them. He's on Camino now, helping with evacuating his younger siblings. Sully gave him a small smile. So that's a no, then. For now. She folded her hands in her lap, crinkling her garnet skirt ever so slightly, and Bail knew her well enough to know that she was searching for something to say. In an attempt to head her off at the pass, he said, "I do love him, and he is our soulmate." The corner of her lip quirked up in amusement. Well, there was no doubt of that. Sully nodded her head towards a shelf behind Bail, and he turned ever so slightly to see that there was a flimsy plate there with half-eaten food that looked like the singularly inedible rations often fed to clone troopers. Bail was of the opinion that forcing children to eat that probably constituted a war crime. There was no question that it did not belong to Brea. Then you can tell Rogue and Tia to stop worrying, or at the very least to stop calling Brea about their worries. Bail, as their brother, had the singular luxury of knowing that even if he didn't answer his comm, his sisters would still love him. Brea, having married in, didn't. The amusement became more pronounced. "I think I can do that, yes." "And you'll tell them he's a person. Reassure them, I mean. No matter his origins, the dimension of his family, and the life he was forced into, Fox is so much his own person." Sully held up her hand, sending her bangles clattering. She had such a delicate elegance to her that Bail had trouble remembering that she knew the Vade nearly as closely as Bail himself did. She'd spent the last 4 months of the Relief Corps on Ryloth, trying to juggle real work with motivating wealthy women across the galaxy to open their purses. He knew that she would have spent time there in the dirt, working on a more intimate level with the people of this galaxy than Bail ever had. But sitting here in his office, she looked like the very flower of tradition and innocence. Voice as calm and proper as ever, she said, "Of course he's a person, Bail, and he's your person, and you're his, and both of you are Brea's, and so on. And we have your back, all of your backs. You can finally have one partner in the relationship to manage each of your sisters." It was that meaningless, light comment that finally did it. Bail could feel the wall of calm he'd built within himself come down, piece by piece, and then all at once. Tears pricked at his eyes. "Oh, but we're so outnumbered by Fox's siblings." She stood, elegant skirts rippling, and came around the desk to hug him. "You're a good man." Since she was standing and he was still mostly seated, he could actually press his face into her shoulder, and did so. There was another moment before she said, "Mother would be so proud of you right now." Mazisha Organa had not lived to see her son find his second soulmate, since she hadn't ever recovered from the death of her soulmate, her brother. Bale had been very careful not to imagine how she would react to his luck. He hated not knowing what she would have thought. "I wish she could be here." Selly shook her head ever so slightly. "She is here, Bale. She's in us." They'd been in a somewhat blurry three-way holocall for 15 minutes when Fox looked abruptly to his left.
"Someone's at the door."
Brea, who'd been in the middle of saying something rather unimportant about her day, gave him a smile that she hoped came across as enthusiastic. "I think we'll manage for a minute if you want to check on it." Bale blew their soulmate a kiss as Fox stood and walked out of visual range. Audio range, however, was wider, and they heard the sound of the door sliding open. In the gentlest voice Brea had ever heard from him, Fox said,
"Hello, what are your names?"
Brea's comlink buzzed on her wrist. It was a private message from Bale.
"Kids."
So they were both committed to eavesdropping then. Good. It was always pleasing when she and Bale could reach a consensus without exchanging a single word on the matter. It was a skill they'd perfected over their years of marriage. They were still learning to adjust the instinct to accommodate Fox, but, well, Brea hoped to have the rest of their lives to learn to do that.
"Definitely. He doesn't know them, and he never talks to anybody like that. He's too fucking adorable."
One child piped up boldly,
"My name is Destiny. He hasn't picked a name yet. Are you Fox?"
Brea always liked kids who had attitude. Cute. Bale, who knew this fact well, gave her a look.
"Yes, I am. Can I help you, Destiny?"
There was a silence, presumably something happening that they couldn't see.
"You're in charge of the Yamaria paperwork, right? You put me on the wrong transport. Is this not your batch?"
Brea could picture Destiny, a child with Fox's eyes set in a miniature version of his face, crossing their arms.
"Yeah, but it's still the wrong transport." "Why is that?" Fox asked, very patiently.
The other child finally piped up.
"They're my soulmate, Commissioner Fox. My transport isn't for ages. It isn't fair." "You'll still be able to share, even if Destiny is on Yamaria. My soulmates are far from here, and I share with them every day."
It was true. They weren't quite at Skywalker Amidala levels of frightening codependency, but items slid from Kamino to Alderaan to Coruscant with ease. Brea had Fox's toothbrush sitting in her bathroom, and Bale's newly prescribed reading glasses in a package to be sent back to him in the morning. Destiny said,
"Yeah, well, you have friends here. Weir Colt and General Pons are your friends. Ms. Shock said so."
From what Brea knew of Fox's relationship with his brothers, Weir Colt was going to get teased mercilessly for the fact that the younger clones called him Dad.
"He doesn't have friends in his batch. They're mean, and they don't understand him, and it isn't fair. He just has me, and you're going to leave him here with them, and you can't. Nobody who really has a soulmate would ever."
There was another palpable silence, undercut only by near-simultaneous sharp inhalations from Bale and the child. The holocall hummed slightly into the stillness. Finally, Fox spoke.
"Why don't you come in, and we'll get this sorted out?"
The door closed with a click and a hiss.
"Bale, Brea, I know you're listening. You can at least say hello."
Fox came into view again, this time with a hand on the shoulder of a person who was entirely too small to be reasonable. Brea would have placed his age at 4, or maybe a big 3.
"Bale, Brea, this is my Vodica. And this,"
he reached up to turn the view of the scanner slightly,
"is Destiny. I'll go get the paperwork I need to delay your transport, Destiny. Everybody play nice while I'm gone." "You can't have 2 soulmates,"
Destiny called, as Fox disappeared from view.
"Why not?"
the other child asked them.
"Hello,"
he said to Bale and Brea.
"Where are you from? Is it sunny there?"
"Yes," Brea told him, "but only sometimes." Fox had gained 2 shadows. They weren't particularly good spies, either of them, and he'd decided that at this point, the best course of action was to just pretend he didn't see them and make sure he didn't use any curse words in front of them ever. "Someone is popular," Alan murmured, and shoved her fork into her mouth. She ate in the dining hall with the rest of them, long body crammed awkwardly between the bench and the table, neck bent painfully as she tried to meet his eyes. Fox didn't think he would ever really understand her. By now, he'd discerned that her relationship with the other Kaminoans was not just stressed, but actively hostile. And yet, the why of her remained in question. "Do you know what's wrong?" Colt's tray clattered down on the table with theirs. "The Shadow likes you, huh?" He'd been wondering what the others called this nameless, numberless brother. "You call him that?" Seeming to misunderstand the question, Colt told him, "It's really the other way around, I suppose. For all their fight, it's Destiny who follows him most of the time. They're more worried than he is." "And he's not welcome in his batch. Why?" Colt and Alan exchanged a look and lowered their voices further. In a near whisper, she confided, "We have a theory. There must have been test subjects for the reversal of the accelerated aging. That process was developed by the initial project scientists before they were arrested. They destroyed a lot of their research before the Republic seized the facility. We don't know who the first subjects were." "You think they're not really his batch?" Colt nodded. "Destiny's batch is smaller than it should be. Not that that's unusual. There'd been too many deaths and disappearances in every generation of Vare. Colt and Fox both had missing batchmates they would never know. But them and their soulmate don't remember finding out that they were bonded. And that's unusual. How often do batches more than a year apart spend time together?" "Almost never, until they were old enough for the year not to make much of a difference in maturity and strength." "And there's no records of this, none at all." Alan fidgeted with her fork, interweaving it between her three fingers. "Not all of the children can be directly known to us." She earned a lot of respect from him by referring to them as children. "Master T has the force to help her keep track of people, but Colt and I can only remember so many. As you can tell, we've both taken notice of Destiny and their soulmate for some time. I believe the matter has been referred to Yemoria so that their guardians there will be aware, and I've attempted to bring it up in my communications with those scientists who are willing to speak with me. That is a higher number than you might expect. They're all desperate to plead that they were the ones who were really trying to help." "Of course they were. Did you learn anything?" "Other than that there were test subjects before the Republic finally invaded and directly assumed control of all the labs? No. Most of them don't even remember individual children. I'd like to say they forgot to make coping easier, but the truth is, I don't think they gave a fuck." "Harsh, but honest. And Destiny and their soulmate, has anyone tried asking them?" Colt shifted slightly in his seat. "If we're wrong, we'll only succeed in making him feel further isolated from his batchmates." Fox chanced a glance behind him. Destiny and the boy were sitting alone amongst a bunch of preteen clones twice their age, picking away at a shared tray and watching Fox intently. Though the cafeteria was far too large for them to hear his conversation, he still felt a twinge of discomfort. Caught out, the children both immediately glanced down at their food. "I don't think you can make him feel more isolated than he already is, except by taking Destiny away from him." "They should have more than each other. What's the point of being a VOD if you don't have a family of millions?" It was the ideal, of course. Colt was living it, here surrounded by Vare, and knowing and loving as many of them as he could, being loved in turn. On Yemoria, Cody was doing the same, and so was Bly on Ryloth, with the relief corps being mostly Vare. But Fox wasn't. He'd chosen Bale and Brea with no regret at all. Still, sometimes there were downsides, things he'd lost when he'd chosen Alderaan. Destiny's soulmate didn't even have those things to lose, so it was no real choice. And as for Destiny themselves, they'd chosen their soulmate, just as Fox had. "Having a family of millions doesn't mean it's easy. If anything, I think it makes it harder." Alan made a humming noise in her long throat that probably was meant to be a sound of frustration. "There aren't enough hours in the day to fix everything that's broken here. Not enough hours in a lifetime, even." Fox knew what she meant, but leave this one to me. The passing of the Restitution, Reconstruction, and Rebuilding Act, or R3, as it was quickly branded in the news, was celebrated as a last hurrah of the quickly disbanding senators, even by those who'd actively opposed it. Though he would have the highlights replayed to him later by a bemused Mon Mothma and an increasingly hyperactive interim Senator Binks, by-election coming before the reconvening, thank the goddess, Bail missed the celebration. There were no regular ships from Coruscant to Kamino, but Anakin and Padme had happily declared a family vacation that had carried Bail with them as far as Yae Maria. There, while they'd been busy handing their children over to Uncle Obi-Wan, Bail had caught passage on a transport ship returning to Kamino to pick up more children. Fox met him on the landing pad, standing under an extremely robust umbrella, chatting with a Kaminoan who must have been Alan C. She recused herself, passing the umbrella to Fox and dashing back inside, before he could be sure. It turned out that holding an umbrella in a torrential downpour and pulling someone into a kiss at the same time could be done. It could probably have been done better if the metal of the landing pad wasn't so slick. They both tumbled to the ground in a heap of limbs and umbrella. Fox laughed, grabbing the umbrella and quickly holding it over both of them again. It was really pointless, since they stayed sitting on the ground, getting increasingly soaked. "I missed you," Bail told him, and received a quick peck on the lips in response. Somehow, in all their months apart, he hadn't felt truly separated from Fox. Perhaps it was the miracle of being soulmates, or maybe it was just their unique relationship. Padme and Anakin were terrible at being apart together in the way that Bail, Brea, and Fox excelled. He didn't think there were many people in the galaxy who could have made the incredibly important life decision that Bail was here to help facilitate without ever setting foot in the same room. But the three of them had, because they knew each other well, trusted each other implicitly, and respected each other profoundly. "Have you said anything to Destiny and their soulmate yet?" Fox shook his head. "No, I wanted to make the offer together. And maybe call Brea, too. They deserve to know that all three of us want this. As it should have been." Brea finally met her children in person in the midst of a dry summer when the people of Alderaan had retreated indoors. She'd been torn about what to wear for ages, but the heat had made the choice for her, forcing her into a white sundress with a pattern of blue butterflies. She wore a cream sun hat over her veil, keeping her face in the shade. The boy ran off the ship ahead of the others. Destiny, clearly protective, bolted after him, sensibly stopping in the shade of the ship while the younger child dashed a lap around the landing platform in the sweltering heat. "It isn't raining, Des!" "Duh." He skidded to a halt in front of Brea. She knelt. "Brea Organa." He scuffed a foot on the ground. "Do I call you that?" "Just Brea, if you like." Destiny, sliding like a ghost into the space behind their soulmate, said, "You're the queen here, right?"
"I am."
"And queens tell the truth, right?"
"The good ones do, I hope."
They met her eyes. Just as Brea had imagined, they had Fox's eyes. It wasn't a surprise, of course, but there was something wonderful about it, about children with his eyes, no matter how many of them were in the galaxy. "Did you all mean it? What you told us on Kamino? We get to stay forever, and you won't send us away, even if we're bad, and never ever for decommissioning." Nothing in the galaxy could have made Brea turn these children over for decommissioning. Not ever. "I swear it." She looked to Fox and Bail, who'd come out of the ship and were both sweating in the sunlight. Fox had sensibly peeled his jacket off and was standing there in his undershirt. Bail nodded, and Fox gave her a thumbs up. "We can prove it to you now, if you want." There was a wary hope on their face. "How?" Fox said something in Mandoa that made their eyes go wide, and the boys' eyes, too. Destiny said, "But they're not even Mandos."
"But I am," he told them. "The Mandalore even told me so herself once."
If Brea hadn't already had Bail and Fox both, she sometimes thought she would have proposed marriage to Satine Kryze. "They both know the words, and they know what they mean. The choice is yours if you want it." There was a moment of tense uncertainty where the children regarded each other. Destiny made a wordless gesture, and the boy shoved them.
They shoved back, and the boy pushed their hands away. They both stared at each other again as the boy nodded before Destiny turned back to Fox and extended their hand to him. Yeah. Fox knelt on the ground in his nice white pants. Bale, still sweating in all of his clothes, joined him, with a radiant smile on his lips. Nikartail Gai Saad, Destiny Organa, Fox said, with the words he drilled into Bale and Brea on more than a dozen calls leading up to this moment. Bale offered the words next, and then Brea. By the end of it, Destiny collapsed, sobbing, into Fox's shoulder. As children often were, they had been worn out by their own emotions. Brea turned her gaze on the other child. I know you are my child, but I still don't know your name. He stared at the ground. I don't know it either. Bale scooted sideways on the ground to be more in view. Can I suggest something, Odd? Someone had been finding free time to practice Mandoa. Yeah. On Alderaan, we sometimes give the living names that are alike those of the dead to carry in remembrance. My mother was called Mazisha. If you would like, you could carry a version of her name. Mazishan, perhaps? Destiny peeled themselves off Fox. Mazik would be a cool name, but don't let him name you if you don't want. He's not, the boy pointed out. You are. He sing-songed. You said you wouldn't, but you did. I win. It was clearly some past argument that Brea knew nothing of. Frustration and amusement seemed to war in Destiny. Amusement won out, and they snorted as the boy turned back to Bale. Mazik Organa, please. And so Bale said the words, and then Brea, and then Fox, and their family was complete in every way that mattered. The wedding, 2 months later, was little more than an afterthought. End of chapter 2.